Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom, hosted by Adam Sartwell.
All right, welcome, listeners. Let's just get into our sacred space before I talk about who's here with me today. I call upon the Great Spirit. I call upon the two who move as one through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. I call upon the goddess, the maiden, the mother, and crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. I call to the god, lord of light and lord of darkness. I call to the god of the green and the gold, the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, so mote it be.
Okay.
So I am here with Nathan Hall. Would you like to say hi to our listeners?
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yay. So I've, of course, got a list of questions, just like I usually do. So let's dive into it.
Sure.
How do you spiritually identify yourself?
So I identify myself. I feel like it's always kind of in transition or moving in flux from one thing to the other. But generally, I mean, the constant has been sort of as a witch.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been that way for many years at this point. one thing that I began to understand about myself in my process of learning about witchcraft was that the thread that really held it all together for me is animism. And animism was something that, you know, once I identified it and began to like understand it better, I saw that it was really kind of the through line for all of my my spiritual passions, my interests, my, you know, every little dive that I take, you know, is sort of anchored by animism. So yeah, that's kind of the crux of it.
Yeah. So if I were to take that and put it into a spiritual identity, maybe an animist witch.
An animist witch is great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the people that I interview have the, you know, like sort of center island is witch. And then they have little islands that are around them
right.
that they move into and out of. I don't know if
Definitely.
That's a perfect metaphor, but
it works.
It works. Yeah. So you've written a book. Tell us all about the book that you've written.
So I wrote a book called Path of the Moonlit Hedge, which feels like forever ago now. It was, I think I was writing it during when the pandemic first started. So, and then it published the following year, maybe year and a half later or so. It's a book that, you know, when I pitched it to Llewellyn, my pitch was, you know, I want to do a book delving deeply into animism and helping people like me who were like trying to, you know, struggling with identifying exactly what the, you know, spiritual leanings I had were. And Llewellyn said, great, let's do that. But the first one, you're going to have to do a big introduction and do a very, very intro, you know, the classic Llewellyn 101 style that they sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly get labeled with. And so that was my first book, and I did a lot of, you know, introductory practices and things like that in it, and touched on a number of animist things. But it was that. And another surprising thing that came out of it was how much of a space the healing journey occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I, you know, finished the book and looked at it, I was like, wow, it's like 30% of my book. But it made sense because it is something that, like, on my witchcraft journey, that is kind of one of the center spokes of the whole thing is trying to work on and constantly be processing healing and going on my personal healing journey, whether that's physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. I think it's all tied together. But it was surprising to realize, once I had kind of set the book down, how much of that is part of my practice, and maybe just, unconsciously, I didn't, just didn't even realize.
Yeah, sometimes it takes the writing of the book to be able to see yourself clearly, because it's an
Yeah.
amazing mirror for yourself and for your practice. And
Definitely.
yeah. So you've spoken a little bit to it, and I think I skipped this question, but what is your witchcraft origin story? How did you get into all this?
It's kind of scattered. I mean, like a lot of things in my life, it's kind of like a scatter diagram of points that are connected. But it, like the animus thing, I feel like started very early. I feel like I was born an animist, and I feel like most of us as humans are born animist, and then we learn not to be by our culture and our society. So immediately I felt like there was that leaning towards magic. I feel like animism is sort of an understanding of magic or an expression of magic or something. They're very tied together to me. And then as as time went on, the area that I grew up in was a very small town in rural Illinois, and it was built on top of a coal mine, an abandoned coal mine. And I feel like that always has a tendency to just create spiritual upheaval in some ways, any like mining or anything like that, really kind of messes with the land spirits, messes with everything that's happening. So that, and then there were just all kinds of different things going on in that area. My parents and myself saw, like spectral lights, UFOs, whatever you want to call them. I don't claim to know what they are, but I have seen them. And then my dad was just kind of a big weirdo. He was into like the Time Life Mysteries books with the about psychic powers and about ancient druids and all of that stuff. So that was really like at a point where I was like also discovering sci-fi and fantasy, and then coming upon those books in his collection, and it just kind of set a fire in my mind about, wow, this like magic stuff, I wish it was real. And then like, oh wow, this magic stuff is real. So yeah, it's been something that's just always been like developing as time goes on. But yeah, so actually, and I'm sorry if you can hear them, I've got like two animals howling to get inside my room.
I can't hear them at the moment, so
Great.
hopefully
Okay.
our listeners
Awesome.
can't either.
Got a dog and a cat outside the door, and they're meowing and snuffling.
YouTube's or the Zoom is really good for like filtering out all of that, which
Great.
is really very nice. If you have the right settings going.
Right.
So
But yeah, I think I mean, like, to kind of continue with that thread, it was. It was by the time I was in my early teens, like 14, 15, I had found Buckland's Big Blue Book at a bookstore and bought that, and was kind of like, what is all this? I always wanted to find, I mean, that book is particularly written for solo practitioners, but I was always like after that coven experience, and I never really found it in my youth. It was always there were always just too many circumstances that were a little, people too far away, not quite the right fit, not where I was at that point in my life. So then, I ended up just sort of delving deeply on a solo journey and kind of kept it that way for a very long time.
All right. Well, you are coming to Templefest to teach. So what are you
I
teaching on?
am. So one of the things from my book, another thing that was surprising from my book, was, or surprising to me, was that I had a section on like sort of developing a relationship with mushroom spirits, and it was almost like a throwaway part of the book for me. I was considering not even including it because it just sort of like popped up while, I mean, I had been practicing some of this, but then like the real meat of it just kind of popped up right in the middle of me writing. I was like, what is this about? Why should I include this? And it ended up being something that, with when I talk to when I do workshops or whatever and talk to people who have read the book, that ends up being one of the parts that they bring up immediately. It had a real resonance that I was not expecting at all. So as a sort of nod to that, and in my next book that I'm writing now, I've got a whole section sort of devoted more to these mushroom spirits or fungi spirits, kind of as like a thanks to them. I didn't, like I said, I didn't anticipate that being such a big part, and so now I feel like I have like a debt of gratitude to give to other, to the Mushroom Kingdom in general. So one of the classes that it's a very long way for me to say one of my classes is called Super Mushroom Powered Spells. And it's more just like how to sort of relate to spirits of different types of fungi, and different, just different types of mushrooms, and how they might work well with your personal magic, different ways, different, from like turkey tail mushrooms to cordyceps to destroying angel or Amanita muscaria to even, I even have like a section on how to work with just the standard white button portobello mushrooms, and ways that they can, that they can become good allies for you in your magic, especially with things like I'm very passionate about meeting the people who want to be your friends. And I feel like the portobellos are just an example of a mushroom that has been with humanity for so long that they're naturally inclined to work with us, and therefore much easier to work with on a spiritual level as well. So yeah, so I like, I pull on all those different threads, and yeah, it'll be kind of part lecture and maybe a little journey work or meditation to go along with it. And then the other class that I'm doing is called Facing the Witch Within, and it's kind of a departure. I After doing workshops for a while, I kind of was like, I needed to I needed that artistic itch scratched a little bit. I like art. I think it's very important, and it's very important to have, especially for someone like me. I'm very verbal, or I'm very, language based, just by default because of who I am, and as a writer. So I feel like even if you're not good, or you don't think that you're good at a particular artistic style or expression, that challenging yourself to do that is an important thing for deepening your magic, and deepening your spiritual practice, because it makes you uncomfortable. It puts you in an uncomfortable space. It's like, like going skyclad when when you first start doing that. Like, it takes you out of your comfort zone. It puts you in a different, completely different frame of mind. And I feel like practicing art can be can trigger some of the same things. So in that class, we're going to it's going to start with a journey work, where each of the attendees or participants will be meeting the, the sort of the witch, the archetypal witch, the great goddess who is the witch, and experiencing what it is that you need to shed, and essentially will, after the meditation, be making masks, painting, assembling masks, to then be able to remove them from our space as a way of sort of moving through, and another nod to the healing journey kind of thing. But yeah, so it I that idea came to me almost right after the last Temple Fest, I think. I was like, this was fun, but and I think at last Temple Fest I had a little figurative, like we made mushrooms out of clay, out of air dry clay. And I was like, I really liked that workshop. It was just a lot of fun. And I liked seeing people, like, because when we go to conventions, conferences, festivals, and everything, you do kind of get into the workshop presenter. You have a lot of workshops that you attend, and you kind of get into this default where it's like, even as a presenter, you get into a default where you're like, there's one way to do this. I have to like stand up and lecture, and everybody listens. And having that element of play, I think is just a good way to like kind of throw everything in a bag and shake it up a little bit, and then set people free afterwards. And
Yeah, because play
so,
is our first way of learning about the world.
yeah,
You got to play
absolutely.
with things if you want to learn it, And I do think art taps into a creative source or a primal source that hits us on multiple levels.
Absolutely.
Voices of the Temple is brought to you by our many wonderful sponsors for the Temple of Witchcraft Community Center Fund, including our anonymous and monthly contributors. Special thanks to the Robin's Nest, a metaphysical community in all ways for always. Located in Bellingham, Massachusetts, the Robin's Nest offers a wide selection of magical tools, divination decks, books, crystals, incense, herbs, oils, teas, and candles for all of your spiritual and magical needs. The Nest also offers up a wide range of services, including psychic readings, rituals, and classes. Shop online at therobinsnestma.com or come to visit in person and be greeted by the sounds of running water, tinkling chimes, and laughing voices as you step into the magical realm. If you would like to become a sponsor for Voices of the Temple and contribute to the Temple of Witchcraft Community Center Fund, please contact Debbie Stellhorn at Debbie, and that's an IE, Stellhorn at templeofwitchcraft.org. Or look for more information at our website at templeofwitchcraft.org.
So
Yeah.
how now, all right, so you do sort of an animistic approach to witchcraft.
Right.
Tell me a little bit more about what that's like, and for those people who might not know what animism is, just give a quick definition of it.
For me, I identify as the sort of intersection of my witchcraft. I identify animism as everything being imbued with a spark of the goddess. And beyond that, a spark of the consciousness of the goddess. So that everything is in some way, shape, or form animate and able not just to be manipulated or used, but actually partnered with and worked with. And I think that's always been sort of the crux of it for me is I very early on, I was just like, there's not a lot. I mean, like there is a very strong animist element in witchcraft to begin with. Like it's there already. So I don't feel like I'm so sort of plumbing the depths in any way. I'm not like forging a new path. People have been down this path before. I think it's just sometimes we get, I think culturally we're at a point where maybe we need a reminder of how important these partnerships and relationships are, especially to witchcraft. Because they are spirits. They are animate forces that we're working with. They're not just like a rock that you throw into a bag and it's, good luck or whatever. You're working with something that has an identity and a unique identity. It can, you can have the spirit, I like Christopher's sort of pulling in of the concept of devas, where you have, you can have the spirit of a rock, or you can have the, of quartz or whatever, in the oversoul of quartz, and you can work with both. Both are possible to be worked with. So yeah, the animist element, I think, is always kind of there. And then so animist witchcraft for me, the practice is in spending a lot of time outside. And that's one of the warnings that I've given people in the past, and I think even in my book, is that, like, if you have some issues with like not liking to be outdoors, an animist path is kind of a challenge for for those people. But generally speaking, for me, it's just a love of being outdoors. And I didn't always have a big passion for being outdoors either. Growing up in the Midwest, it was like corn country, and I would get really bad allergies because of all of the pollen and stuff in the air. And I was like, I just don't want to go outside for large periods of time, but I also grew up, with a lot of different passions and of for my oh, my dog sorry
It's okay.
but passions for the woods that was behind my house, and the stream, and seeing the sort of energetic signatures of some of these different things when I was a kid was like extremely magical and extremely eye-opening in a lot of ways, to the point that it became like I finally realized that not everyone experienced things in that way, and that was strange to me. That was, but that was like the beginning of understanding difference between what people are programmed out of, and how, like I didn't grow up with any strong spiritual, like I didn't grow up in a church or anything. And I feel like that was a really great gift. It was an unintentional gift because my parents were asked not to come back to the church that they had started to attend when I was an infant. But yeah, so don't know if that answered your question, but
Yes, I'm sure it did. So my next couple of questions are about your work with land spirits. So what do you think is the importance of having a good relationship with the land spirits?
I think that so for me, I'm a transplant to Florida. I moved here a while ago now. It's been almost 20 years. It's 19 years this year that I've been here. So I had to learn everything brand new. Like it was coming here fresh. And it's a unique environment too, because it's not just, it's not just oceans, it's not just beach. We also have the largest freshwater marsh, I think in the world, with the Everglades. So there's a lot of diversity in the ecosystem. There's a lot of uniqueness that you can't find anywhere else. And there's a lot of people here that make you want to just like scream and run away. So turning, I had to turn my focus very quickly to the nature here and to appreciating the nature and the natural world, and then developing friendships and relationships with the land spirits. And something that I always kind of tell people is that, the practice of befriending land spirits is a long-term practice. It's not something that happens quickly. You can't. My son is very much into Pokemon right now, and it's not like
No.
Pokemon at all. You cannot grab them all, and if you did, you would probably get burned. So it's been, for me, it's been this slow practice of making regular appearances in places, becoming something of an expected element in different land spirit environments, whether it's, at the beach or walking trails through the swamp, that's like 2 miles from my house. Even just doing acts of service, picking up litter, stuff like that has all helped develop these relationships. And as time went on, certain spirits did sort of like make themselves known, spirits that were, and in my book I talk about interacting with what I feel still was the spirit of the Everglades. But I wasn't ready for it. I felt like I was ready. And I sort of made some like overtures that were a little more aggressive than I sh they you know like not like to the point of like show yourself to me or whatever, but pretty like in hindsight, like not the most respectful.
Yeah, I get
And
that.
so, yeah. And so I got put on my butt by that. But it was also a good learning lesson. I was like spiritually discombobulated by that for a while afterwards, and the immediate reaction was nausea and vomiting. It was so intense and so overwhelming of an experience that it was beyond anything that I had really experienced up to that point. And just a very powerful learning lesson. So I mean, because of that experience and others, I'm always like, just move slowly, be respectful. Always, I always try to bring some kind of an offering. It's usually either just energy or sometimes water that I'll maybe say a blessing over or something. I try to keep it very simple, out of respect also for the nature that exists there. I don't want to leave food that animals will eat, and I feel like that's it's not the worst thing, but I don't feel like making animals more familiar with people, and especially associating us with food is the best thing either.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, it's a very enriching process, and there's no there's at this point, like, to quote Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home for me. When I'm at home, I feel in where I'm supposed to be. I feel as empowered as I ever am, and able to do magically shift things and move energy in ways that is challenging when I'm not in my home base, and I don't think that's I think that's pretty normal for most witches anyways, but yeah, having that real those relationships really helped deepen that for me.
Just speaking to that, so I know you've kind of gotten into how this also like informs your practice or helps with your great work, which I think is great. But what do you do when you're traveling? Do
Yeah.
you what do you do to make quick friends with land spirits, if you will?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I always do if I'm staying the night somewhere, if I'm staying overnight somewhere, I'll go out wherever I can, even if it's, just like the edge of a parking lot where there's some dirt, some exposed soil and maybe some grass, a tree, something, and introduce myself, and just say, I don't know who the ruler or whatever of this area is, but please offer my my let them know that I'm appreciative of being allowed to stay here, and if there's anything I can do to in return energetically, please let me know. I usually offer some water. I usually do offer energy. I feel like that has been a very good, it's just a very good basic, like you come to somebody's house, you introduce yourself, you say hello, offer to, do them any favors that, some simple thing that they might need done or whatever, just being neighborly.
Yeah. A little hostess gift.
Right. Right. So, it's just, like it really is. I mean, like a lot of my practice is kind of that, like, common sense interactions with other beings, whether they're human beings or other than human beings, just trying to remember, my manners, be polite, all the stuff that my mom taught me.
And also knowing a little bit about like what is polite to spirits
Right.
is always a good thing, and whether or not they have their own idiosyncrasies like every human being out
Course.
there. I was just watching something where the kid was like, the guy was talking about, oh, I'm sorry, we can't share food because I can't have my food touch. And I thought to myself, wow, that's just like a spirit. Sometimes they're like, no, I don't work with this person.
Right.
I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah.
thanks for telling me.
Right. Yeah, and that's the other th I mean, like, sometimes you go places and they don't have an interest in working with you, and that's not uncommon, I think that that's something that we get into, this like sort of fantastical wish fulfillment that we feel like our spiritual journey should be about, like, acquiring boons and making, friendships with every spirit we encounter. And like, these spirits are just like exactly how you said, just like people, and they have their own personalities, idiosyncrasies. They might not want to have anything to do with you. And you have to respect that. Like, you have to be like,
Yeah.
okay, you
You
know,
know that there are other options out there. You
right.
know, that you're not just because the like, you know, this crystal doesn't talk to you or
Right.
doesn't work with you, doesn't mean you can't connect with another one that would do something similar for you.
Yeah.
So what is your best advice that either you've been given or you have come up with by yourself that you could give to community that you think would be helpful?
I feel like there's so much of it that is like, you know, sort of the rote kind of know thyself and every, you know, that kind of, but it, for me, my coming into my own witch power and everything, has really been a process of understanding where my sort of psychic injuries are, where my wounds are. And working through them, trying to heal them, going on the lifelong journey of healing them, because that's how we become better people. That's how we become more effective communicators and better witches in general. And I think, you know, having that experience of the healing journey is a it's central for me, you know, and I would encourage everyone to do similar.
Yeah, I think it is both that healing journey and the ever unfolding of who we are.
Yeah.
That those two together, I would almost oscillate between,
Yeah.
because sometimes it's hard to explain that where, like, being in the place that I am from where, you know, like way back when. You know, when I
Yeah.
started out, it was a very different being than.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. I feel like, I mean, to me, I feel like they do, those two things do go hand in hand and may even like complement each other or be part of the same thing, you know, where you do the healing. So, I mean, because there are people who become obsessed with or addicted to the process of healing, and then it becomes something that it's not intended to be. You know, you get too addicted to the healing journey, and healing work, and sometimes I think that you're not working on yourself anymore. You know, you're feeding into some other part of yourself. Feeding into one of the other sort of air quotes demons that, you know, that are a part of all of our psyches or our egos. But yeah, I think that I really I think that they do kind of complement each other
Yeah.
100%.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being with me. Let
Of
us
course.
just get out of our sacred space and then we'll say goodbye to all the listeners.
Okay.
So we thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the goddess and the god for being present with us, for moving through us and working with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives, blessed be. Merry
Blessed be.
meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
So, bye, listeners.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.